Food is fuel for your body, your mind, and definitely your sport. But let's face it, nutrition is confusing, and the expectations on girls and women to be thin and have a six-pack are exhausting. If you've ever been frustrated with your body, confused about nutrition, obsessed with eating healthy, or guilty when you don't, underate, overate, or overtrained, and overwhelmed with all the pressure, then this podcast is for you. Nutrition can be easy. You can take control of it, but it might start with letting go of control by asking for help and making a change. I'm Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, sports dietitian and owner of Rise Up Nutrition, where I empower female athletes to overcome nutrition concerns and perform at their highest level, to stop being confused by all the mixed or harmful messages, and finally have confidence in your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. Today's episode is thanks to our Patreon members and our affiliates and partners. Head to patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition to join our membership or donate to the podcast, and stay tuned to hear about some amazing deals and discounts from our partners, including Prevenix, Inside Tracker, Orgain, Practice Better, and Jen and Carrie. But for now, we're getting right to the show. Enjoy. Hello, fans and listeners. Welcome back to another episode. It's Lindsay Cortez here, your host of the podcast, owner and sports dietitian at Rise Up Nutrition. I'm here today with our amazing reoccurring guest, Dr. Nikki Kay. She's a medical doctor with expertise in the field of exercise endocrinology. Graduating from Cambridge University, she is honorary clinical lecturer in the Division of Medicine, University College London. Nikki's clinical and research endocrine work is particularly with exercisers, dancers, and athletes with a focus on relative energy deficiency in sport, known as REDS, and with women experiencing perimenopause and menopause. Her book, Hormones, Health, and Human Potential, A Guide to Understanding Your Hormones to Optimize Your Health and Performance, was released in 2022. It's a valuable resource and read for all of us. And Dr. Kay has been on our podcast before. She was on episode number 38 and episode number 98. So please go check those out. Dr. Kay, welcome back.
Thank you very much for having me back.
Yeah. And so since you've been on the podcast before and we've talked, we've done deep dives into the role of hormones in REDS and just the role of hormones in general, I thought today we would get a little specific and talk about the thyroid hormones specifically, because as I shared with you, I find the thyroid hormones very confusing.
Well, that's true. I agree with you. So yeah, let's try and unpack it and get down to the details and decompose.
Yes, decompose. It's every time I get those thyroid numbers when I'm looking at blood work of a client, I have to like reopen my books and re-educate myself every single time. It's very confusing. So that's what our episode's going to focus on. And let's kick it off with you just telling us, what are the thyroid hormones and the main function of the thyroid, you know, gland that's producing those hormones in our body?
Sure. So the thyroid gland is located here in the neck. It's like a butterfly gland. And that gland is producing thyroxine, T4. Mm-hmm. And thyronine, I can never say it properly, T3, right, okay, T4 and T3. And there is more T4 than T3, because T3 is actually like the super active one. They're both produced by the thyroid gland, but there's also some degree of conversion of T4 to T3 peripherally in the tissues. So far, so good, right? Mm-hmm. And also, what's the function of these hormones? They control metabolic rate. Metabolic rate is effectively the rate at which you burn through energy, I suppose you could say. Like, what rev count have you got on your car, you know? And where have you got the thermostat turned up to, sort of thing, right? So they control the rate at which you burn through your food, convert it. But they have other effects on the body. You know, like with many hormones have one sort of major role, but then they have lots of other ones. And no difference for the thyroid gland hormones. Thyroxine and T3 have also an important role for bone health, for example. We know that estradiol is the queen when it comes to bone health, but nevertheless, T3 have a look in, and T4 and T3, they also help with bone health. So they just keep the metabolic rate, hopefully, in equilibrium, just at the right where you need it personally for you, okay? Mm-hmm. And they might respond if you eat a little bit more, they will increase the metabolic rate and vice versa, by the way, because they're responding. And how are they going to do that? Well, now we have to refer to the master controller of all the hormones, the conductor of the endocrine orchestra, the pituitary gland.
Yes.
That's located in the brain. Even in this hierarchy, even above that, there's hypothalamus. The hypothalamus is another, it's an endocrine gland, but it's got a really amazing role. It keeps an eye on everything that's going on outside your body.
Mm-hmm.
It's like keeps a watching brief on how much exercise you're doing, what are you eating, what's going on in your life, what's stressful, and et cetera. But also it keeps an eye on what's happening inside your body,
mm-hmm.
In terms of how's your body, you know, what shape's it in, how's it looking? Is there enough energy to go around? How are the bones looking, et cetera, et cetera. So it sort of combines all this information, the hypothalamus, and then it's very close to the pituitary gland, the conductor of the endocrine orchestra, and then it sort of translates all that information to a message to the pituitary to say, right, if we're talking specifically about the thyroid gland, the pituitary gland will release what's called TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone. Okay, so TSH will be released by the pituitary, and that will control the levels of the amount of T4 and T3 released. And it's one of these negative feedback loops, which is typical, really sort of like the classic thing for all hormones, because it's this like Goldilocks. You don't want it too hot, you don't want it too cold, you know, want it just in the right level.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you do that? It is this feedback loop. So let me explain a little bit more. So the TSH signal will go to the thyroid gland to produce T4 and T3. But what happens if the gland gets very enthusiastic and starts producing quite a lot of T4 and T3?
Mm-hmm.
And then the hypothalamus will notice that. It's like, well, hold on a minute. The metabolic rate's now too fast, right?
Okay.
And so then it will say to the pituitary gland, hold on, just dampen down that, bring down that level of the TSH message being sent to the thyroid gland. And so that becomes less, and therefore it will produce less.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like blood glucose control.
Yeah.
You know, if you measure it in real time, blood glucose goes up and down. This is on a very, blood glucose is the obvious one because it's really quite varies, you know, very tightly with time. So it will go up and down, but on average, it stays in the middle. The same for the thyroid hormones. On average, we want it, the body's aiming to keep it in the healthy range. So that's really what it is. So what the key things you need to remember are that TSH is the hormone that controls the thyroid gland from the pituitary gland.
Yep.
And the thyroid gland produces T4 and T3. And the main action of those hormones is to control your metabolic rate, but also some good spin-offs for bone health and other things.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. That was so helpful. And so I think focusing on this metabolic rate for a moment, we have a lot of, I don't know, like fluff sayings when it comes to the nutrition field of like boost your metabolism, you know, by eating, I don't even know, X, Y, and Z. And I think, could you give us like you said, that the thyroid, it's that negative feedback loop. So yes, your metabolism, if you eat more, mm-hmm. metabolism will increase. If you eat less, metabolism will decrease, but it also tries to regulate it very tightly. How, like, people can change their metabolic rate over time, but how, like, realistically, if somebody was to, let's just do a hypothetical scenario that maybe they have been under eating somewhat and over time slowed their metabolic rate, and now they begin to fuel better, nourish better, eat more to hopefully boost their metabolic rate. Is there some sort of like realistic timeline as to how quickly you can actually change your metabolic rate?
I mean, unlike blood glucose, which is very, you know, quick, the thyroid gland is a little bit more slower paced.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if we, in a medical situation, if we give someone thyroxine, we'll come on to that, why you might want to give that. But I say, listen, we're not going to repeat the blood test for at least 6 weeks. So it takes,
okay.
It definitely, that's the absolute minimum time. But just to pick up on your point, that the thyroid gland, more specifically, I suppose we could say the hypothalamus, reacts to how much you're eating. And if you're not eating much, quite sensibly, it will say, well, we need to actually save energy and keep everything on the down low,
mm-hmm.
and reduce metabolic rate, which, by the way, is what frustrates some people, because you think, well, if I eat less and I maybe do more exercise, I'm going to be an energy deficit. Math says, surely now I should lose weight, right?
Right.
You might do it first, but then you will typically come to a plateau where you can't lose any more weight. And I'll tell you why, because the body isn't stupid. Or more to the point, the hormones aren't stupid and the thyroid isn't stupid. And it's adapting.
Yeah.
Because from evolution point of view, people might not have been able to eat much if there was a, you know, they couldn't kill their saber-toothed tiger, or they couldn't, you know, they couldn't get enough food. So right. The body will have to instinctively slow the rate of use of this energy. So it's doing what it should do, by the way. But then that leaves you frustrated nowadays, if we flash forward to nowadays.
Right.
You know, it's like, well, why am I eating less and less, but I can't lose weight. I've just plateaued because the thyroid and the metabolic rate slow down. But then, as you say, if you now start to eat a bit more, then the hypothalamus will say, okay, now we're in business. Right. Now we've got something. So let's tell the pituitary, yes, you can increase that TSH a little bit, you see, but it's not going to happen overnight.
Yeah.
It will take a minimum of 6 weeks. Of course, it depends how slow it's gone.
Right.
You know, how far you have to go. You know, if you've run your petrol tank really low in the car, then of course it's going to take longer to fill it up again, sort of thing. So it will take some time for it to reboot, but don't worry, it will. If you've got an intact hormone network, the body is amazing. It will do that and adapt for you. And you have to kind of trust it.
Yeah.
It knows what to do. It's had millions of years of practice, right?
Right, right. Yeah, I think that that's so helpful. And that's one of the reasons why people, you know, even if they are looking for some moderate weight loss, healthier lifestyle, metabolic changes, the idea or notion of just continuing to cut down your calories just doesn't work. And long term, it just, you know, it just hurts the thyroid more and hurts your metabolism more. So really understanding that people, you might make some changes. Maybe it does involve eating a little bit less or differently, but you also kind of have to then, you know, not keep doing that chronically long term.
Well, exactly. It's the old yo-yo diet, but also you have to do it sort of stealthily.
Yeah, because you don't want to be going back and forth.
No. So you just almost like the try and trick the hypothalamus more. It's just a little bit, right?
Right, just a little deficit.
Okay, just a little bit, little small deficit, and maybe not even continuous. You will give it a little deficit, and then, you know what I mean, just very, very gradual, and like that. But if you do the sudden,
a crash diet,
the quick results.
Yeah.
This is sold as the quick result, quick whatever. If it's selling that, then just be really, really cautious. It might do initially, but as you say, then it will just rebound. And then every single time you can understand the hypothalamus thyroid is like, honestly, what's going on here? It gets a bit confused. So you can understand that's not the best way to do it.
Right, right. Absolutely. Yeah. And so hopefully our listeners really listen to that. Just one more message of not doing that crash diet and not being in an energy deficit for too long. And then also as you're making dietary changes, be it increasing your calories, decreasing your calories, knowing that takes, you know, at least 6 weeks for that thyroid to respond. Take longer. Yeah,
exactly. For the hormones to respond, but then it will take even longer for those hormones to have a biological effect.
Oh, true. Right. Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Yep.
So, okay. Yep. If you measure the blood test, it looks a little bit better.
Yeah.
Where it should be, you expect it to be, but then there's still sort of a backlog of all the various cells that the thyroxine was, giving, servicing, I was going to say. I don't know quite the right word, but anyway, a biological response for those cells to also catch up.
Right.
But in terms of metabolic rates and all this sort of thing, I think it's, the nutrition is the obvious one. That's the energy you put in, but also the energy you put out through the exercise and also the type of exercise. And this is why, you know, I have to be honest with you, a little secret here. I don't like doing strength training. I go to the gym. I don't like lifting weights. Sorry, but that's the way it is. Yeah. But I do some, I try and do other strength in other ways. I'm a Pilates teacher of resistance bands. Anyway, whatever. So, but nevertheless, doing that sort of strength work rather than just endless cardio.
Yes.
Is actually helpful because when you do the strength work, you're going to engage a lot of your muscles, right? Your whole body. And also in the muscles are the most metabolically active because they have mitochondria in them that are gobble up energy, right? And convert it to muscular energy, movement energy, etc. So that's the little top tip. yes, you can, we talk about the nutrition, but also think about how you're using that energy and don't look just to do cardio all the time. Do some sort of strength work that suits you, because that will increase the muscles, increase, so that's great, because you get more muscles, right? Number one, body composition, but also those muscles will have more mitochondria, more metabolically active, you see? Mm-hmm. And that continues even after you stop the exercise. It's like, great, so you do your strength work, whatever it is, and you're using lots of energy, metabolic rate, hooray, but then also afterwards, mm-hmm. because the muscles now want replenishing to replenish their glycogen stores, etc. So remember, there's the nutrition side of it, and also the type of exercise you're doing.
Muscle and exercise.
Yeah, the muscle especially, yeah.
Hey fans, I hope you are enjoying this conversation so far, and we'll be back to it in just a moment. But first, I want to pause and let you know that this episode is brought to you by the Female Athlete System of Transformation, aka the Fast Track to overcome disordered eating and use food as fuel to perform at your highest level. The Female Athlete System of Transformation is my unique program and proven systems to guide female athletes to understanding and implementing the proper nutrition for their sport, life, and health. Myself and my team of registered sports dietitians work one-on-one with clients to address their unique needs and counsel them through the nutritional and behavioral changes needed. Many female athletes who resonate with disordered eating, mental guilt around food and body, relative energy deficiency in sport or female athlete triad, amenorrhea, repeat injuries due to negligent nutrition, or frankly, just a lack of knowledge and understanding on their fueling needs, have seen incredible success in the Fast Track. After years of working as a sports RD, I've compiled the most effective ways for female athletes to learn nutrition, be supported, be challenged, and ultimately find their success with fueling as fast as possible. So don't wait another day. Get to your goals faster by joining the Female Athlete System of Transformation. Look in the show notes or head to the website to book a free call and learn more. Okay, now let's get you back to the conversation. Enjoy.
Yeah, I being a student, got firsthand experience with that throughout my undergrad, graduate studies, and then throughout my 20s and my first few jobs as a dietitian, I continued to have access for my clients of metabolic testing and would do it on myself periodically.
Yeah.
And this was also, so from age, you know, let's say 20 to 26 or 20, yeah, around 20 to 26 or 28 or something, I was every couple of years doing metabolic testing on myself. And throughout this time, I also was getting stronger. Mm. I was working side by side with wonderful strength coaches at different universities and organizations I was working with. And I always picked their brains and had them put me on strength training programs. And I did build muscle throughout that time in my life too. Mm. And it was really cool to actually see that my resting metabolic rate did increase throughout those years. But this is just my personal experience, mm-hmm. but I also do want to share with listeners, like, that's so cool that I increased my resting metabolic rate through building more muscle, but it also was still a kind of small amount. Like, I think over the course of those 6 years, it was like 250 calories, you know?
True. No, it wasn't massive, but it certainly, right. every little bit helps.
Yes.
You know
yes.
what I mean? And by the way, maybe we should just clarify, Lindsay, do you think, you know, what do we mean by resting metabolic rate, basal metabolic rate? Because these are words that will be bandied around.
Yeah, let's
so
do that.
Resting metabolic rate, if you lie in bed all day, don't know many people can do that. but anyway, if you were to lie in bed all day, you're still going to burn through a lot of energy just to stay alive. Mm-hmm. You might sort of get up and move a little bit. You might go to the toilet, but just very, very minimal. Okay, resting. That's how much energy you need as a human being to stay alive, just not even doing any extra activity.
Right.
And by the way, resting metabolic rate is higher for men than women, mm-hmm. right? They're much more wasteful. No, seriously. It's because they do have more muscle mass. Mm-hmm. See, this goes back to the muscle mass thing. So that's why you have a man and a woman lying and you'll measure and the resting metabolic rate will automatically be higher for the man because he'll have more muscle than the woman. And we said that muscle is more metabolically active. So that's resting metabolic rate. Basal metabolic rate is a term you might come across, and that means literally you have been sort of rested overnight and like the extreme of rested, if you sort of mean.
Yeah, like just doing nothing.
So anyway, but for practical terms, normally we say resting metabolic rate because You know, we can't expect someone to be absolutely stationary for a day and then we know, you know, it's not practical. So that's the resting metabolic rate. But you're right. Nevertheless, if you improve your body composition and get more muscle, as you say, it's a modest increase in metabolic rate. But listen, we're not going to sniff at it.
Right.
It's something.
It was something, yeah.
And you feel positive. And also it's not just because you want to increase your resting metabolic rate. It's also because having more muscle is good.
Yeah, you're strong.
You can lift up small children, right?
Yes.
And do things like this, right? And shopping and, you know, just for your everyday life. And also, you know, muscle is more dense than fat. So actually, even though you might weigh the same on the scales, you know, rather than getting fixated on this measurement of gravity, anyway, you know, that's my little thing.
Right.
Actually, if your body composition has changed, in other words, you've got a slimmer waist because that's more, you're more muscular, you see?
Right.
And because it's denser, then that's a good thing. So yeah, it's as you say, it's all lots of extra little bits along the way. Why doing some sort of strength training, whatever that looks like for you, is a good thing for metabolic rate, but also actually it's got other benefits as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's shift over then to these terms that people have probably heard a lot: hyperthyroidism, and hypo. So that's when we've got hyper meaning an overactive thyroid producing too much thyroid hormone, and then hypothyroidism producing too little. But again, it's like, well, in a normally functioning body, this should be tightly regulated. So how does one even get into a state of hyperthyroidism or hypothyroidism?
So those are medical conditions. I mean, the body is amazing. And as you know, I think the hormones are especially amazing. But nevertheless, we know that sometimes things go wrong, right? So there should be this tightly regulated negative feedback loop, homeostasis, everything nicely in equilibrium. But if there's a problem with the thyroid gland itself, then, yeah, that's when things get out of kilter. So, for example, hyperthyroidism means where the thyroid gland gets too enthusiastic. It stops responding to the control signals from the pituitary gland and it does its own sweet, merry thing. It starts getting really enthusiastic and starts producing way too much thyroxine. So hence the word hyper.
Right.
You know, you imagine someone hyper, what image do you conjure up? So these are all the tests. You see, you put your hands out and they're trembling and your brain's buzzing. And, you know, because there's too much thyroxine, that can even affect the bone health. It can make that, you know, not so good, right? Because it's a big turnover. Everything is sped up. Metabolic rate increased. That's a medical condition. There's like a fault in the thyroid gland. It just goes, does its own thing. And so if you look at the blood tests for someone like that, you will see the T4 and T3 very high, but you will see the TSH very low.
Because it's trying not to produce
because
more.
Because the hypothalamus and the pituitary are saying, what the heck?
Yeah.
They're saying, look, please don't produce so much. And so that's why you see the TSH low, suppressed, and you see the T4 and T3 high. So it's a mismatch. So that's overactive thyroid, and that's all the signs of the person, right? Typically, you would say that, because they're speeding up the metabolic rate, they would lose weight, typically.
Mm-hmm.
However, I've also seen it actually where the person is now so hungry that they might even put on weight. So it depends. It's not a clear-cut sign.
So but basically behaviors they feel, play a huge
yeah,
role.
Yeah, so, yeah, too. Exactly. But basically, they feel uncomfortable. They feel really on edge and, you know, not good. And for women's periods, we'll come on to this later, but, you know, these hormones are all interacting. So a woman might also report that her periods have become very spaced out and light, right? Mm. So those are the things. There can also, so that's overactive thyroid. There is a sort of a subtype of hyperthyroidism called Graves' disease.
Yes.
Right? So why does the thyroid gland get too enthusiastic? As with some of these things, the honest answer is we don't know. You know, there's all sorts of ifs and buts, you know, maybe a virus tickles up the thyroid. Maybe it's a genetic thing. We don't know, really.
Yeah.
But there is a specific thing called Graves' disease where you produce antibodies to hype up the thyroid gland. Really weird, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, listen, this is a slight digression, but autoimmune disease in general, what does that mean? It means you produce antibodies to your own tissues, right? Mm-hmm. Especially more common in women than men in general terms. I actually have an autoimmune disease. I have rheumatoid arthritis.
Oh.
So for some strange reason, my body's taken a dislike to the synovial lining of my joints.
Yeah.
Strange and really annoying. Anyway, yeah. I digress. But so we don't honestly know what the origin of Graves' disease, like we say, genetics, survival, we don't know. But
yeah,
the net result is, yes, you will have the overactive thyroid, but also these antibodies, for some strange reason, can affect the eye.
Oh, yeah.
So when you have got an overactive thyroid, the person literally is like, you know,
big eyes.
Yeah. And so you can see the whites of the eyes above the iris, right?
Yeah.
You know, most people, your lid will be there, but like, imagine like, I'm like this.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also with the Graves' disease, the eyes actually stick out.
Wow.
Because the antibodies attack the muscle.
Wow.
And gets the muscles all inflamed. And so in the worst case, actually the movement of the eyes, when you ask the person to move the eyes from side to side, because it's all inflamed, they kind of get stuck. Anyway, so that's sort of a subtype.
Yeah.
Of overactive thyroid, Graves' disease, which people might have come across.
Yeah.
So
you can have just hyperthyroidism for unknown reasons because things happen in the body, or it could be this autoimmune
Graves'
disease where you're, Graves' disease.
Yeah, with an extra level of the eye complication, which is obviously worrying.
Right. Yeah, that's worrying. Right. Mm. Right. And so obviously with these autoimmune diseases, disease states, is this where, medication comes in does that help with Graves' disease? Does it help with the general hyperthyroidism?
So hyperthyroidism, what you do, you have to give medication to stop the thyroid gland being so over-enthusiastic.
Yeah.
It's a very complicated metabolic pathway, so I'm afraid I can't explain it to you.
That's okay.
All I know is that I know what the drug name is, carbimazole. There you go. I know that. Right? And all I know is we give the person this drug that stops them producing the so much T4, and then it should calm it down.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's such a tricky one. That's why you have to monitor the person very carefully, because it might be you can start with the dose and then you can gradually tail it off. And sometimes that will sort of stabilize it. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes you might have to they might have to stay on that. And sometimes at that point, the person gets really fed up and they say, look, I don't want to take these tablets.
Yeah.
So another possibility sounds a bit drastic, but you can knock out the thyroid gland. And you swallow a capsule of radioactive iodine.
Wow.
And it knocks out the thyroid gland because, it can be problematic if you've got an overactive thyroid, and it can be really tricky sometimes to control with the carbimazole, and you're going up and down with the dose, and
mm-hmm.
it's a headache for the person. So,
yeah.
So that's a possibility. There are other things for the Graves' disease. Sometimes if the eyes get really, really bad, you might even need surgery. But anyway,
mm-hmm.
We'll see. So medication is the answer.
The treatment,
treatment. So that's the overactive thyroid. Should we do the underactive one now?
Absolutely. Let's switch
That was hyper. Now we're doing hypo, which is underactive thyroid.
Mm-hmm.
So same principle, that the thyroid gland, again, we don't always understand why, basically sort of, throws in the towel and stops producing so much thyroxine. So on blood tests, you'll see low T4 and T3, but the pituitary gland and hypothalamus, very cross.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to increase the TSH. Mm-hmm. So now you're going to look at the blood test and you're going to say TSH very high. You're going to see T4 and T3 inappropriate or unexpectedly low. In the UK, and I believe in the UK, US, what level of TSH are you looking for? Certainly here in the UK, we say that that's 10 international units per milliliter, right? And it depends on the units, because I know you guys over there sometimes use strange units. anyway, let me give you in England, I've got this number in my head that like it's 0.1 TSH, 0.1 to 4.5. And so in the overactive thyroid, remember the TSH will be very low.
Yeah.
So it'll be even low. But if you've got a high TSH, and certainly when you get to that cutoff of 10, like really high, it's like, okay, we've got a problem. We need to do something. And how will the person feel and look? So just as the other person will be hyped, the other one will be, really lethargic, tired, feeling cold, typically putting on weight because the metabolic rate slowed down.
Mm-hmm.
And for women, periods tend to get very heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So those are the things with that. And the autoimmune thing also, raises its head again. Similarly, why is the thyroid gland packed in? It could be, again, an autoimmune disease.
Mm-hmm.
Hashimoto's,
mm-hmm.
thyroiditis, which is a strange one because, again, what triggers it? Virus, maybe, we don't know. Anyway, you'll see if you do the autoantibodies, you'll see that those particular ones, what's called anti-TPO, thyroxine peroxidase will be high. And what can happen in Hashimoto's is initially actually the thyroid gland looks a bit overactive. It's like it's released all this hormone. So it might go up a bit and then it will crash down. It will become very underactive. So you have to sort of watch that pattern. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so now you've got somebody who's got an underactive thyroid, TSH is very high, and they're feeling miserable. Mm-hmm. So what do you do? Guess what? You give thyroxine replacement. And this is for life because, you know, the gland has pretty much permanently, you know, retired. So yeah, that's, I think those are the main things to say about those two conditions. Oh, by the way, one extra little thing is these autoimmune diseases in general are more common in women, including the thyroid.
Okay.
And also, by the way, relevant in pregnancy.
Mm.
If you haven't got the dose of thyroxine correct, or you have got an overactive thyroid, it can, number one, affect fertility, because I've said the periods will be a little bit.
Right.
What? But if you've got somebody, a woman who is on thyroxine and she becomes pregnant, here in the UK anyway, we see that woman in the medical antenatal clinic because we might have to increase her thyroxine during pregnancy because obviously there's a bigger demand, right?
Yeah.
You see. Anyway, that's just a sort of slight aside, I guess.
Well, those are the nuances, you know. This is the female athlete nutrition podcast, and those are some, you know, nuances.
But that's an extra thing. Pregnancy is another extra thing.
Yeah.
Going back to the hypothyroid, the underactive, the autoimmune one, what I do see sometimes, Lindsay, is that sometimes people get the antibodies tested, and they might be a little bit high, but the thyroid function, the TSH and T4, are entirely normal.
Okay.
Personally, I'm not comfortable starting on that person on thyroxine at that point in time.
Okay.
It does give you an indication. It says, look, you've got some antibodies knocking around, so we need to keep an eye on it. But I think sometimes starting thyroxine too soon when you don't need it, it might be you will need it, right? But it's a case of watching and giving the thyroxine when you need it. And certainly, you know, there are downsides to taking thyroxine when you don't need it. Because it's like over revving the car.
Right.
Salazar, need I say more? You know that coach, disgrace coach?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, he wasn't actually banned because of thyroxine, because thyroxine isn't on the WADA banned list, because they are assuming that doctors will only prescribe it when it's needed. But he was using it in a not so scrupulous way. People with totally normal thyroid measurements, but giving it to speed up their metabolic rate, thinking maybe this will help them, you know, stay a low weight.
Right.
But then we have a concern that, you know, like I said, is someone with an overactive thyroid in the long term, it could be bad for your bone health. Anyway, the point is you don't mess with your hormones, by the way.
And I think also just knowing, you know, you don't want to take medications unnecessarily. There side effects and consequences of that.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I, you know, I think it's a good point of, okay, just because I have these antibodies, let's still, you know, we don't have like, because in the case of Hashimoto's or something, like you said, the thyroxine medication would be necessary for life. So it's something that.
Yeah, it's a commitment. If it's true, you truly need it.
If it's true, it's a commitment. And so, you know, it's worth really exploring, getting those second opinions, looking at everything to know, is this really true? Do I really need this? Because if you can delay it or, you know, not need medication.
It's just getting the timing right of it. You know, just like anything like HRT, you know, you might need it in the future, but you know the timing of it, you want to make that right. And we do cover that. There's a thing called subclinical hypothyroidism, so where your TSH is a little bit higher. I'm just giving you our ranges in the UK, right? But and it also will depend from lab to lab, but say, let for argument's sake, let's say the upper range is 4.5 and the NICE guidelines it's 10. So what happens if you're somewhere in between that?
Yeah, like
what happens if you're 6 or 7 and you've got positive antibodies? Then I am going to be saying to you, we need to keep an eye on this.
Keep an eye on
Let's repeat this in 2 months or whatever the timescale is, we think. Because probably if it's going to move that way, then we'll be on it. So that's the thing. That's the thing people should remember. It's a case of monitoring these things.
Yeah.
And also, as you get older, unfortunately, as you get older, things do get a little bit not work so well. And that includes the thyroid. And we know that as you get older, your TSH starts to creep up a little bit.
Okay.
Basically, because the thyroid is just like a little bit tired. But, you know, mine is hovering, you know, it can be sort of five-ish like that, mm-hmm. you know, like that. But I monitor it. I only do it actually every year. In fact, I must do another one. Anyway, you know, but it sort of hangs out around there.
Yeah.
And that's okay. But if it started to creep, then it's like, okay, now. So that's the other really important thing to say. I think with any measurement, Lindsay, any measurement we can, whatever it is.
Tracking it,
keeping an eye on mm-hmm. it, seeing what direction it's going in, up or down or staying stable. Yeah. Everything has a little bit of wiggle because, especially with hormones, because that's their nature. Like we said, it's negative feedback. It has got a little bit of variation. It's not a perfect line like that.
Thanks to Inside Tracker, I can get insights and feedback on my blood biomarkers whenever I want to. No more waiting for doctor's visits and them telling you, you're fine. Instead, you are in control of your health with Inside Tracker. For 20% off any of their products, blood biomarker testing, DNA kit, inner age, head to InsideTracker.com and use the code RISEUP. Take your health into your own hands. Health, wellness, and fitness coaches, listen up. Practice Better is the all-in-one platform that I use to manage my business and my clients. From client scheduling and messaging, hosting sessions, taking notes, creating modules, invoicing, telehealth, building reports, and more, Practice Better is the better way to manage your practice as a nutrition or health or fitness coach. Look no further. Use the link in our show notes and use the code RISEUP20 for 20% off your first 4 months plus a 14-day free trial. I've been using Practice Better since the inception of my business, Rise Up Nutrition, and I couldn't be happier. Again, the code is RISEUP20, all caps. Use the link in our show notes for 20% off your first 4 months and a 14-day free trial. Let's get back to the episode.
Exactly what I was thinking as you were talking. I was like, you know, it's not so much just about what is the number, but it's those trends over time. And
exactly,
so I think it's a good reminder for people to, you know, get probably yearly blood work and pending what's going on, maybe more often. But
yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good reminder there. Now, the other specialty that you and I both have in our own regards is dealing with relative energy deficiency in sport, Red S. And that, though we can heal from Red S, so, you know, our hope is that if you have Red S, this is a temporary thing because you can heal and overcome it. But that can also, a huge part of Red S is that our hormones are out of whack, our endocrine system's out of whack. And so can you shed some light for our listeners on how thyroid might be affected if you're in a state of Red S? And then again, since I just said you can heal from Red S, does your thyroid heal as well?
Mm. I mean, the good news about, you know, Reds that are low energy availability is that, as you say, you can overcome this, you know, and restore your hormone health. Mm-hmm. Because what's happened is, going back to the sort of basics, what is it? It's when you get an imbalance in your behaviors. Right. Mm-hmm. So when you aren't fueling sufficiently to cover all your demands, and that has an impact on your hormones respond and adapt. So by the way, you know, my other little pet thing, it's not the hormones have got out of balance. I'm afraid it's you. Right. Sorry, guys.
She's saying, you know, that with a big grin on her face. I'm afraid it's you.
Well, it's not. Yes. I've been there, done it. So I can say honestly, I know how easy it is to slip into that mindset.
Yes.
It's like, no, I know I'm doing the right thing. I'm doing this crazy amount of exercise and I'm not eating anything, and you convince yourself this is the right thing. What happens then to your hormones is they have to adjust and adapt. So they are merely doing their job.
Mm-hmm.
They're merely, you know, evolution is like, okay, we're in a quite bad situation here. This is starvation. Mm-hmm. You know, when back in the day when you couldn't pop to the supermarket and get something to eat, you know, literally you couldn't get food. So the body knows what to do there. Going to save energy. What would you do?
Slow down its metabolism. Yeah.
What would you do if you're running low in your petrol tank in your car? You slow down.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that's exactly what the thyroid gland does. It slows it down, reduces the demand for the resting metabolic rate.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the blood test now of someone in this situation, you will see TSH and T4, T3 all just a little bit low.
Mm-hmm.
All of them.
Oh, and TSH.
So that's strange, isn't it? Yes.
Oh.
You see, this is the difference.
That's what's always confused me.
There we go. We've clarified that. So the medical conditions that a primary underactive thyroid, primary means that is the problem there in your neck. A primary one means that that is not doing the business. It's not producing the hormones. Mm-hmm. So TSH will be very high. It will be a pattern like this. Mm-hmm. One's up, one's down. And vice versa if you've got the overactive thyroid.
Right.
One's up, one's down. You know, whichever. And that's it. Pattern of which is up and which is down. That tells you, you see, endocrinology made simple.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
Right. But the strange thing is, in reds, you will look at that blood test and it's like, oh, all of them are low.
Yeah.
I mean, when I say low, they might still be in the range.
They could still be within a normal range, but low on the low side.
Yeah. The TSH might be 0.9, let's say, right?
Yeah.
And the T4 will be 10. This is in my brain, my range is in England, right?
Yes.
Right? Which is low range, and T3, depending again, there's so many different ranges and units, but you get the gist.
Yeah.
It might just squeak in there, but all of them will be low. Now, that is really weird.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, normally there's a good conversation going on between the hypothalamus, pituitary and the thyroid. So that's really weird. And by the way, this is exactly the same pattern you see in a woman whose periods have stopped with FHA, okay, functional hypothalamic amenorrhea. You look at the blood tests, what do they say? They say the control hormones, FSH and LH, especially LH, will be low range, maybe in range.
Mm-hmm.
But also, the estradiol and progesterone will be low in range.
Right.
Really weird.
Looking at all of them low.
Everything is down. If everything is lowish, and this is my other, I'm getting a lot of things that annoy me. this is the other thing that annoys me. You know, people come to me and say, well, I've been told by my GP that these blood tests are in the normal range.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong.
Yeah.
And we've had all this discussion about, you know, if you haven't got any periods, even if your blood tests are in the normal range, low, there is a problem. Sorry.
Right. You have to look at the outcome, you know, it's like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, so that's the obvious one think of it in exactly the same parallel with the thyroid gland.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is in reds, I can guarantee you right now that their thyroid hormones will all be a little bit low. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so that distinguishes it from a primary underactive thyroid is because of your imbalance in your actions, your behaviors, you see. So in that case, you are not going to give thyroxine. No, because you only give thyroxine, remember, if the TSH is raised, right? And you've got absolute evidence that the person needs it. It's not a problem with the thyroid gland. It's just quite sensibly just shut down, reduce the metabolic rate, saving energy, all those words, okay?
Yeah.
And so what are you going to do to reboot the system? It's the same thing that you would say to try and reboot your periods. Guess what? You've got to rebalance the energy intake, energy expenditure. So it comes back to the same thing. And actually, by improving, getting the metabolic rate back to where it should be, that will also help the female hormones, right? And all the hormone systems, because it's not, although we've been focusing on the thyroid axis, by the way.
In the case of red S, it's all the hormones.
Guess what? Yeah. It's all of them, and they're talking to each other.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're all under the same boss here in the brain, right? So it makes sense.
I really hope our listeners are taking notes. I have been. I've been taking notes. And you just, seriously, I just had this huge aha moment because I'm like, this is why I always get confused with my clients when I'm looking at thyroid because, and I know because I do focus, a lot of my clients are in, not all of them, but a lot of them are in a state of red S.
Yep.
And so I know that these are normal, but it just, I go to the textbooks and I'm like, this doesn't make sense. But it's because my textbooks don't cover red S. That's the problem.
Well, exactly. Because it's a subtle thing because the textbook tends to do medical conditions.
Right. And then I'm like, this doesn't line up. And
This is a functional issue.
Right.
And if you really like, in my book, I've got a graph with the thyroid, where these zones are.
Yes.
Okay. That we've been talking about. If you're a visual person, you like it. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad that that's clarified that.
Yeah.
And listen, listen, you're not alone.
Yeah.
I'm afraid to say there are lots of doctors that still.
Yeah.
All right. So, I'm glad we clarified that.
Yeah. And for me and my approach with clients anyways is, hey, we're going to solve the, you know, if I know that red S is the underlying problem for other reasons, regardless of thyroid, it's always for me just interesting of let's keep focusing on the behaviors, the energy balance,
and it will all come
our
good.
Food. Yeah. And it fixes itself. Yeah, exactly, you know, they get their blood tested again in 3 or 6 months. And I'm like, okay, there you go.
Because it's so reversible, which is really, really positive, which is the message we want to get across. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you have a medical condition, you know, that's just bad luck, like a rheumatoid, that's just like, you know, whatever, except that's it. You do have to take the medication. That's it. But this is really empowering what we said just here.
Yes. Yeah.
That actually, if it's something that you can do, you can change. We're not saying this is easy, as we know.
No.
The mindsets and everything, but it should be really positive news that you can do something about this and you don't have to resort to medications.
And, you know, I really want to hit on that point even further. I really want to drive it home because I think that when people are struggling, they kind of, it's our nature to kind of look for a reason, look for an excuse. We almost want some sort of diagnosis, you know, oh, that makes sense. I must have Hashimoto's or I must have, I know that that might feel like, oh, there's a reason, but actually it's better, even though you have to take your own personal accountability, actually is better if the reason, like you said earlier, is you, that you actually need to change your behaviors because you can improve.
Yeah. But no, but then you feel better because you're empowered. You're empowered. I don't have to rely on a medication.
Yes.
And also the other thing is, Lindsay, I think everyone wants a quick fix, doesn't I do?
Yes.
You know, if there was a quick fix to reverse rheumatoid, you know what I mean? Let's be frank. If there was a quick thing, great. I understand why people want that quick fix, but it's actually much more beneficial and satisfying that you can fix it yourself.
It might take
a little bit more time. It will take time, but it's worth it because then you'll have gone through that and it's like, yeah, that feels really good. I've sorted that. And also, you know, this resilience. And then in the future, it's like, okay, if I can deal with that, I feel really confident. I can deal with other stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really helpful. I'm the same way too. Like, we want answers. We want to know, but if the longer route is sometimes harder, but it is more empowering in the end and really, really helpful.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, this has been incredibly insightful. I'm trying to think if I have any further questions. I think just I'll share one other little tidbit of, you know, in my experience working with clients that do have altered thyroid hormones. And, you know, they're also coming to me because there's something wrong with their nutrition. It could be red S, disordered eating behaviors, overexercise, things like that. And as I already mentioned, my role is to focus on nutrition, energy, fueling, nourishing your relationship with food, relationship with body. And then, you know, it's really interesting how hormones can heal and fix themselves when you're focusing on your behaviors. But I will say with that said, sometimes both can be at play. You know, you can have not good nutrition and fueling, and you could be in red S and maybe also have an autoimmune disease. You know,
there's
certainly things that can be overlapping, and that's where it's just worth exploring all your options, getting to the root of it, pulling in a whole team of experts. You know, you've worked with many of my clients, and that's been so helpful that I don't have to kind of stress about they're on a medication. Okay, Dr. K's, you know, monitoring that, and that's helpful. So I can keep focusing on, you know, what I do with clients.
Yeah, no, that's a really important point. You know, just because you have red, it's not saying you might not have something else medical, as it were. And also, I've been observing, I haven't done a proper study on this. I'm just wondering, even based just on me, whether if you've sort of been through this, does that make you more likely to develop an autoimmune disease? So listen, the thing, I don't know, that's just me just throwing it out there, as a thought. And after all, REDS is, it's, you know, it's functional hypothalamic amenorrhea, it's functional. So it's a diagnosis of exclusion. Mm-hmm. So absolutely, we're not going to dismiss people. We're going to do the blood test. That's why I do the blood test, to make sure there isn't a lurking medical thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
Rare. But I picked up one or two things, over the years. So that's why, you know, we want to make sure that everything, we're looking at you as an overall person, every little nuance and what's going on. And also there are some things for the thyroid gland. You know, we know iodine, for example. If you don't have, because iodine is important. I'm not wearing my necklace today, but I've got my earrings. I've got T3 and T4 earrings, right? And you can see the difference of them because T3 has got three iodine molecules and four, and T4, it's got four of them. Okay.
That's awesome.
Ions, iodine ions, if we're going to be technically. Anyway, and you get, where do you get iodine from? Well, actually, you're probably more expert on this than me, but my general understanding is, you know, iodized table salt and seafood, which is why apparently historically in Switzerland, where they're landlocked country, they didn't have much access to iodine. So they would, get goiters, thyroid gland would swell up because it hadn't got enough iodine to make this.
You could actually see it in the neck. It's the thyroid swells up so much you can see it.
Yeah, bulging out. Exactly. So anyway, you know, there are some little, but I think most people nowadays, you do have enough iodine, and there's meant to be some other micronutrients, aren't there, Lindsay, that are helpful for thyroid health. But these are sort of the finer bits of it, you know, the little extra pieces. But I think looking at the most important reasons is the first port of call, but just bearing in mind these other nuances as well.
Little things. Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you again. This was so helpful. And I want to give another shout out to your book, Hormones, Health, and Human Potential. That is out. It's on your website. It is on Amazon as well, is it?
Oh, yeah, it's on Amazon. Okay. I hope that the US Amazon sped up because I understand that it was only on Kindle, although on Kindle, okay, the diagrams are in color. But anyway. hopefully they've got their act together, but if not, and you want, you know, a hard copy, as it were, then my publisher, Sokoa Books, also on my website, they ship internationally. So if you want the book itself, then you can, do that as well. But yeah, both links are on my website, either Amazon or direct to the publisher.
Yeah. And I have the book, a really nicely written book that, you know, yes, you can, you know, look something up if you need to, but really reading it chapter to chapter is quite nice because it really tells a story of the hormones.
Oh, thank you. That's exactly what I wanted it to be.
Yes.
I didn't want it to be a textbook. It is a story.
It is a story.
You know, that picture, that's of me jumping on a beach. And, you know, I wanted it, and you know my belly length, so that's why it's written in two acts and it's got scenes. So it is a story. But as you say, you can read it any way you want. You can read it like the story, or you can dip into bits however you want. And if you want to really get into the nitty-gritty of some of the stuff we've discussed today, rest assured, there are plenty of references in the back.
Plenty of references.
And to your heart's content, look up all those research papers if you want.
Yeah, excellent. And I also want to help promote your social media sites where you put out really helpful information, and just to tell everybody, because we've had you on other episodes, and so we've shared your social media site, but you had the unfortunate experience of getting your account hacked, so you had to start a new one. So let's make sure everybody goes and follows your new account. Can you remind us what it is?
So the new account, simple, at Dr. Nikki, N-I-C-K-Y-K, spelled K-E-A-Y. So yeah, my other one, old one, Nikki A Fitness, got hacked by a male from Turkey, anyway, who blackmailed me. And then just recently, for some reason, he's reactivated it. But I'm just, please don't, you know, so see it. Please, if you have time, please report it, because that's not me in control of it. So I don't know I have no guarantee what's going to pop up there. But if you come to my new one, Dr. Nikki K, I am continuing, as you say, Lindsay, I try and, you know, post interesting things, things that are happening now, you know, the whatever is the latest, you know, a thing of interest here in the UK. We have the whole debacle about dosage of HRT, for example. But anyway, whatever is I feel is interesting, I plonk on there. And also for consistency across other, you know, Twitter and Facebook, I've just changed it all to Dr. Nikki K.
Dr. Nikki K.
It just makes it simpler. I mean, my website's still Nikki K Fitness, but, you know, I think
website domains
get the gist.
are more difficult to change. I know,
So I'm leaving it there. So, you know, hopefully you'll find me one way or the other. Or go to your, because all your channels, also you're linked to me or following me or whatever we reciprocally follow, so that, you know, that's the other way around.
Yeah. I repost your stuff, and in these show notes for this episode, I'll include all your correct updated links of the real Dr.
Thank you so
Nikki
much,
K.
everyone. No, well, listen, thank you so much for your support, Lindsay, personally, honestly, really appreciate it. And to everyone listening today, really, because, you know, you and I, we're in the business of giving people reliable information, supporting them on all that sort of thing. So, you know, we're absolutely on the same page.
I'm happy to be on the same page, on the same team together, helping.
Yeah, exactly.
Helping women, active women, exercisers, female athletes. So thank you again. And I'm sure we'll have you back sometime in the future.
Absolutely. My pleasure. All the best. See ya.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you did, if you are a true fan of female athlete nutrition, then I would love if you could support our podcast by spreading the word. Share a review on your listening channel. Give us 5 stars. It really helps get the word out and get the show more views to positively impact others. Also, you can support the podcast by joining our Patreon. Head to patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition to consider a donation, or even better, join our membership where you get extra monthly content and perks. We don't want you to simply listen alone. We want you to be a part of a community and a movement of fierce, fit, and fueled female athletes. So patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition is where you can do exactly that, learn more, and join. A huge thanks to our affiliates and partners as well. Once again, Prevenix, Inside Tracker, Orgain, Practice Better, Jen and Carrie. Please go check them out and their links in the show notes where you can get deals and discounts. Last, be sure that you do more than just listen. If you need help with fueling, it's time to take action. Head to my website to learn more. You can either book a free call with me to learn more about our coaching programs and how we can work directly with you, whether it's the fast track or otherwise. Or you can take our online self-study course, Female Athlete Nutrition. You can literally sign up and gain access right now. You can explore our downloadable products, including the Red S Recovery Guide, High Iron Fueling Guide, or if you are a coach of a team, check out our brand new Coaches Toolkit for teams. You can also just learn more. We have a blog, a Red S quiz to see if Red S is affecting you. If you need help, I want you to get help fast. Too many girls and athletes struggle with nutrition, but you don't have to any longer. You can rise up with the power of nutrition, take action today in any of these avenues, and become fierce, fit, and fueled. Links in the show notes, and we'll see you next time.